Today we'll be discussing MMA legend Georges St-Pierre, and then we'll be discussing ulcerative colitis. This is Doctor vs. Comedian. I'm Dr. Asif Doja, and this is the Doctor of Laughs.
Not a real doctor.
Ali Hassan. Every episode, I pick a topic for Ali from comedy and entertainment, and I question him about it. Then Ali picks a topic for medicine and health and grills me on that topic. Today, for our entertainment topic, we'll be discussing MMA legend Georges St-Pierre, because MMA is a type of entertainment, right, Ali?
Hey, don't be like that. I sense a tone of sarcasm.
No,
it's
incredible
entertainment. It is.
We'll be talking about him, but, you know, Georges ended up retiring from MMA due to a disease called ulcerative colitis. So in our second half, we'll be discussing this disorder. So Ali, before we get into this, I did want to talk quickly about an email we got from a woman named Susan. Such a great email. I want to read it on the air for everyone. This is from Susan. She listened to our endometriosis episode from a few weeks ago with Dr. Soni Singh, and I'll just tell you what she wrote in this. She says, I'm an 84-year-old woman who's never had period pain and have easily had 3 conceived children, but I found this podcast absolutely amazing. Exclamation mark. I'm sending it to my sister and daughter, who both have other younger women in their families. My husband, who was a family doctor and has sadly passed on, I'm sure dealt with many women with this condition and would have loved to know more about it. I love your show and look forward to it each week. And she says, I also love Ali on your Saturday show on books, which is on CBC. She says, I forget the name of it at this moment, but like I said, I'm 84. So Susan is hilarious, and it's a really nice thing, and we really appreciate it. So sorry about the loss of your husband, but I'm glad to hear that you think he would have liked the podcast as well if he had heard it.
And then Susan added a PS, which said, you better do an episode on Georges St-Pierre or Asif, I will put you in a rear naked choke.
Okay, Susan. We're going to get started right now.
Susan's too kind for that.
Okay, Ali, let's talk about this guy. You had texted me and said, let's talk about Gorgeous George. And I thought you meant Gorgeous George, like the wrestler, like I think from the 50s.
There is an OG Gorgeous George, but I challenge you to look at Georges St-Pierre and the specimen that he is and not refer to him as gorgeous. I challenge you, sir.
Well, I call him GSP. I think that's what I've heard him referred to. I've seen him in person. He was at a wrestling show I was at a couple years ago in Montreal in the audience with Ariel Helwani, who is a MMA journalist. Originally from Montreal. I have seen him in person, and I definitely know about him. We'll talk about how I know him a bit better for some of his entertainment stuff he's been in. You know, that's a little hit for the Marvel Universe. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But why don't we talk a bit about the background of this guy? A lot of people say he's from Montreal. He's actually from St. Isidore, which is a smaller city in Quebec, right?
Yeah. I mean, I lived on the south shore of Montreal most of my life. We always thought Georges St-Pierre's from Chattigny. That's what we used to say, which is sort of a neighboring town to Brossard, where I grew up. Turns out he probably said Chattigny because St. Isidore is something that is a place not many people, including myself, who would have lived 20 minutes from there or 15 minutes from there even, have ever heard of. I think it's one of those things. It's sort of a blip. As you drive by, there may be an exit for it. There may not. So not everybody would know about this place. Definitely a small town.
And he, I guess, grew up there. He started getting into, I guess, martial arts because he had a difficult childhood. And he would have other kids bully him, steal his clothes, steal his money. And so he started doing karate, this Kyokushin karate at age 7, basically to defend himself against a school bully.
Well, actually, there's a special TSN did called The Mind of GSP. And Robin Black, I'm sure you know who Robin Black is, Asif, right? An MMA commentator, broadcaster. He was saying, what did these bullies do to you? And he was like, well, there was a bunch of older boys and they would beat us up for money every day or something or the other. He goes, one time I remember in the classroom, these guys shut the classroom door and then they came around me and they were smashing my head against the desk. And he showed Robin, he goes, I still have a scar here on the top above my hairline. People think that's from fighting. It's not. It's from when I got my head smashed on the desk from some bullies in the plural. So, you know, I don't want to minimize anyone's bullying, but people do use the word bully quite free and loosely sometimes. This is like actual physical abuse.
Wow, I didn't know that about him. So he, I guess, got a black belt by age 12, I was reading, in karate, a second dan black belt. And he did other sports. He did hockey, he skated, you know, he did other sports. But I think he really got into fighting. And he ended up, you know, pursuing professional fighting. It's interesting, of course, because he was primarily like a martial artist. You know, karate is really a striking martial art, as opposed to like jiu-jitsu, judo, which is another way people might get into MMA. So he had to learn the ground-based wrestling aspects afterwards. And so it's quite interesting. Of course, he knew how to fight as well, because he worked at a Montreal nightclub I was reading on the South Shore, where you're from, called Fuzzy Brossard.
Bar Fuzzy is a terrible, terrible place. Is it? I would not recommend it. It's awful. I mean, mind you, we're Anglophones. We were younger, we're maybe not the clientele exactly, but you went there if you had absolutely no other options, including one of your friend's family basement. I mean, that would come before Bar Fuzzy for us. It was a kind of a rougher, dirtier place. It had a weird edge to it. Yeah.
Okay.
But it helped him in his training, I guess.
Well, I guess so. Yeah. If it's a rough place. And he was also a garbage man for 6 months to pay for school. So, you know, he definitely, you know, grinded for a bit, right? Before he found his success in the UFC. And he, I guess, debuted in UFC in 2004. And it's interesting, I was reading he competed in two different weight classes, right?
I mean, the second weight class was, I believe, much later on when he made a comeback. But yeah, he was a welterweight for most of his career.
And then he went to middleweight, I guess, later on, as you're saying?
Yeah, when he took a few years off. We'll talk about that. You know, one of the greatest fights I've ever seen.
Okay. Well, why don't we just, instead of going through the rest of his career chronologically, let's just talk about some interesting things about A, his life, and B, his MMA career.
And yeah, by the way, Asif, you mentioned he fought in two different classes. You're underselling this thing. Right. He's a two-division champ. He's won in two different fighting weights. He's won titles in welterweight and in middleweight divisions.
Good point, yes.
I mean, you have to mention this is not a thing that's done often.
Yes, good point. Okay, so let's go over a bit of trivia about Georges St-Pierre. And so I'll do the more entertainment ones, and Ali will do the more MMA ones because he's more of an MMA fan than I am. But people may be like, oh, but Asif, you like wrestling. Isn't it similar to MMA? I mean, you know, not really. I think they're kind of lumped together sometimes, but they're not really that similar. MMA is much more similar to boxing, I think, or kickboxing, things like that. So in his youth, Georges St-Pierre loved Jean-Claude Van Damme and was inspired by him to do martial arts, which is interesting. You can see some similarities. And then later on, as an adult, once he became famous, he was in the film Kickboxer Vengeance. So that's like a dream come true to him because, you know, it was carrying on the kickboxer legacy because, of course, Van Damme was in the original Kickboxer in the 80s.
I never considered this that, you know, for a French kid who probably barely spoke English at the time, you have no real reason to speak English when you live on that part of the South Shore, Montreal, a very, very Francophone area. It's interesting to me that somebody would have seen Jean-Claude Van Damme with his accent being what it was, pretty thick, and despite that, being a star of English movies, the same way some people might be inspired by Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, exactly.
A friend of mine, Hunter Collins, is a comedian, has this great joke about Jean-Claude Van Damme. He said, I love this guy, but the movies got a little less believable over time. You know, he'd be in some bar in the American South, and some guys would come in and be like, where are you from, boy? And he would be like, I'm from right here in Alabama. And it's, you have to see Hunter do that joke. It's fantastic. But it may not be a quote unquote, but Jean-Claude Van Damme, the stories were not believable, but you were there for the fighting. And that's, you loved it. I'll tell you another little bit of trivia about Georges St-Pierre. This is the thing about him that is particularly unique and impressive and what made him who he was. So he trained extensively with the Canadian national wrestling team or members of that team. And he was hoping to place on a team for both the 2008 and 2012 Olympics, but he couldn't each time because of UFC commitments. This is what you need to know about Georges St-Pierre. Karate is his foundation. but he was so good at boxing. Great boxing coaches would train him because they're like, he's good enough that I will train him. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they wouldn't.
Yeah.
He was so good at jiu-jitsu that he could grapple with jiu-jitsu masters. So he could fight on the ground. He could fight up. And then wrestling. Wrestling is like, could not be more different from, there is no striking in his, as you say, karate is a straight. So this is a little insight into Georges St-Pierre. Whatever he did it obsessively until he was the best. He didn't do anything half-hearted, basically. It speaks to his obsessive nature and his insane athletic ability as well.
So it's interesting you said that about his obsessive compulsive nature, or, you know, the obsessive nature to be so good at all these different martial arts, because he talks about how he actually has OCD, he says, and he credits that with being a factor in success. So, you know, because he's so obsessive at mastering all these different martial arts and then putting them together for his MMA career. He also says after his first retirement, which I guess we'll talk about, he had depression, and he is pretty honest about that.
It's a very interesting comment about OCD, and we've done an episode devoted to OCD, but I mentioned it then. I want to mention it again. I remember my friend Dinesh telling me, like, he has OCD, and he said, it's my superpower. Mm-hmm. And I said, what does that mean? He says, I have never made a to-do list for myself that I haven't completed. I get obsessive about checking every single box. If it's 20 things on it, I'm doing 20 things that day. And I was like, wow, what does that feel like? Something I've never done in my entire life, completed a two-day.
And this is what I always tell people. It's a bit more about anxiety, and we do have to do an episode on anxiety, but like everybody has a certain level of anxiety, right? You want your doctor to be anxious about things, because if they're not, they'd be like, yeah, I think I sent you for a blood test. I can't really remember. I guess, yeah, sure, whatever, you know. And you want them to be like kind of following up on things and what's going on with this patient? I got to make sure that I'm doing this, right? People who have zero anxiety just kind of sail through life, yeah, whatever. How am I going to make rent next month? I don't know. Who knows, right? But it's when it gets problematic, right? But you probably will have this sweet spot where, you know, it's actually helping your life as opposed to like hindering it. Of course, you could have crippling anxiety, crippling OCD, crippling depression, and all these other things as well. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting when he spoke about mental illness in his previous interviews.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I want to ask you about, which is this greasing controversy. Like, what is this all about?
Yeah, I mean, look, first let's start with, because I feel like you're attacking Georges St-Pierre, and I want you to calm down a little bit. Okay? One of my heroes of the great province of Quebec. I love this dude. So I do want to say that, man, if you watch some of his fights, after he absolutely destroys his opponents, he would get on his knees beside them as they're crumpled on the ground. He's like, are you okay, man? Are you okay? I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I really like you. This is who Georges St-Pierre is. I need people to understand, one of the most beautiful human beings, a kinder heart. You're just not going to find it. And it's something I love about UFC that doesn't exist in wrestling, that this braggadocio, but it's like, you know, you saw this with Muhammad Ali. If anybody's not familiar with UFC, you saw this, like, I'm going to smash his face so hard, his mama's not going to recognize him, right? All this kind of trash talk. But you do it so you believe it too. You do it so that you don't have any self-doubt. And Georges St-Pierre talks about in that documentary about, like, for him, when he was training for a fight, there's the confidence and there's the self-doubt. There's the confidence that one is always higher than the other. And the goal is, before you fight, to get your confidence so high that doubt doesn't even exist on the radar anymore. But doubt is always right there, and it's winning it sometimes. So he's a wonderful dude with a great heart. Fighting this guy named BJ Penn. BJ Penn, born without a chin and without a nose, basically. He has both, but they are so small. Because, you know, having a large chin is a huge disadvantage in a striking sport. Somebody can clock your chin, and that's how you get knocked out pretty easily. Can't break his nose. You can barely find his nose. Very, very gifted fighter. Incredible fighter. I'm sort of making fun of his face. So they fought twice, actually, maybe a third time, but I know they fought in 2006, and then in 2009, there was a rematch. Georges had won in 2006. In that rematch in 2009, BJ Penn, or his corner, you know, Penn was complaining that St-Pierre was too slippery to hold him. Mm-hmm. BJ Penn, very, very proficient on the ground and grappling, and so holding is important. And that led to some suspicions about, was there anything applied illegally to St-Pierre's back? And that had to be investigated, and Dana White, who's, I guess, the commissioner, is that the right term for him, or is that the WWE term?
Yeah, I don't know. White, Dana White, whatever. He's the...
He runs UFC.
Yeah,
he runs exactly UFC. He was saying, you know, this is a quote that I have of his, "Do I think that he got greased? Yeah, I do. Absolutely, 100%. I think that that guy was rubbing grease on him." That's his corner man. "Do I think George was trying to cheat? Absolutely not at all. But that corner man was rubbing grease on him, and you cannot do that." So that was a little bit, you know, that was definitely unfortunate. But again, it's particularly unfortunate because if there was a guy who didn't need an extra advantage from a synthetic product on his back, it's Georges St. Pierre. At least that's certainly what I believe. Anyway, it's not a big controversy, so calm down.
Okay, sorry. So in summary, BJ Penn was trying to hold Georges St. Pierre, and there was a lot of grease and petroleum jelly involved.
On his back, so it's hard to get a grip on him. That's right.
I know. I was going to try to make it more suggestive than it actually was. Okay, moving on to other trivia, I want to talk about was near and dear to my heart, and that is Georges St. Pierre appearing in the Marvel Universe. Now, he plays a character. He appears first in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. He plays this character called Batroc the Leaper. In the comics, the person's name is actually Georges Batroc, so the first name is the same, and he's French as well, so it's kind of like, oh, this is great. So he is, I don't know why he's called the Leaper, because I guess he leaps a lot, but yeah. The character actually is a French mercenary who is a master of a kickboxing form known as Savate, or maybe Savate. I think it's Savate.
Yeah, Savate kickboxing is like, I did a tiny bit of studying of that, maybe like a few months. It's
what?
It's pretty
you
amazing.
Did? What happened?
Yeah, at McGill. Nothing happened. I just got lazy like I always do and left it in the dust. But like, you got to have rock hard shins. It's like comparable to Muay Thai in Thai kickboxing, but it's a very different style. It's very low and very like just your legs moving. Your arms barely get involved. And, you know, I mean, I only was 3 months tops learning it, but I thought it was pretty impressive. I'd never heard of Savate before that.
Well, you can see why, you know, because St. Pierre is a martial artist and French. They thought, oh, okay, well, perfect. Like, this is going to be the great character. So he plays him in the Captain America, the Winter Soldier, plays him again in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which was a Disney Plus TV show, also kind of based on the Captain America franchise. Yeah, so he's been in a couple things.
He's been more than a couple. And in fact, what Asif told me was like, did you know that when you pull up Georges St. Pierre's name, it says actor? /MMA fight, like actor comes first. That might be alphabetical order as well, Asif. You know.
Oh, you think? Do you think it's like his agents and stuff being like, well, he's a retired MMA guy, so we're not going to mention the actor part first?
Yeah. I mean, from a publicist agent perspective, there's no value in saying MMA fighter because it's been years, right?
Yeah.
He's no longer part what he is doing right now. In fact, in pre-production for Kickboxer Armageddon.
Another kickboxer. Yeah.
Another kickboxer. Wow. But yes, he was a special appearance in French Girl recently, King of Killers, Hitmen, La Mélancolite, one episode, What If?
Yeah, What If is a Marvel anime.
That is Marvel, yeah. He plays the voice of Batroc. But yeah, he was in Cartels and, I mean, you know, he's like following in that Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal path, and none of these movies are going to get, you know, they're not going to be critically acclaimed by any means. That's not what you go to see these fighting movies for, you know? Yeah, Kickboxer Vengeance, Kickboxer Armageddon. Maybe he becomes the Sean William Scott. What Sean William Scott was to American Pie, he becomes to Kickboxer.
Maybe. I don't know. I've only seen the original Kickboxer. I haven't seen any of his Kickboxer movies, so maybe that's on the to-do list. So, Ali, what do you think? Because, like I said, you're more of the MMA and Georges St. Pierre fan than I am. What do you think is his legacy for MMA?
I think when he first retired, so he retired, you know, he has these two different retirements, basically. His first time was after a fight in 2013. He said that, you know, you have to understand something about Georges St. Pierre. This is an insane statistic about him, that 75% of the fights that he was fighting were for some type of like a championship fight, which is a ton of pressure. Like, three times out of four, something is at stake. And, you know, there was one point where he had spent more hours in the octagon than any other fighter in UFC history. I'm not sure if that stat has been broken or not. But he was in a very high-pressure situation. And also, he actually didn't like fighting. And he fought the way he did so that he wouldn't lose, because he hated losing even more than he hated fighting, and made fighting even worse. So his obsessive way of like anticipating 100 different things that somebody can do, like he said that any move somebody was going to make on me, I had already run it through my head 100 times, that move or that move or that. I already knew what all the possibilities were. And his record speaks for itself, 25-2, 26-2 he retired at. Yeah, 26-2, insane legacy there. And when he retired, I think this is also part of his legacy. He was just not, he said he was feeling claustrophobic. You know, later on, you can apply terms like depression to it. He didn't know what he was going through at the time, but he was definitely very sad, feeling tons of pressure, and he wasn't enjoying it. And Dana White, who runs the MMA, as he said, if you have even a hint of a thought that maybe I should quit, you should quit. Right. So he had the support in that way, because it's like you can't have that. You have to, that trash talking, that boisterousness, braggadociousness, that is part of this, as you convince yourself to be something you are or are not, obviously, in many cases. So I think that legacy, that is definitely part of his legacy, too, that he was able to look inside and be like, I'm not enjoying this. Let's leave this for somebody else, you know? And when he came back, he came back 4 years later, and he came back because all that pressure was gone. Mm-hmm. He was still, he said, I'm in the prime of my life. I'm in incredible shape, and I miss the excitement of the fights. And so he came back, and Michael Bisping, who he fought against, which is one of the most exciting things I've ever seen. Now, there have been greater trash talkers than him, but he was just like, go back to Canada, you know, and George is like trying to speak in English. He's like, oh, maybe I shut up, George, blah, blah. Like, it was just, he was bullying him like his childhood bullies were. He's insulting Canada. He's insulting his French background. So I remember, like, my blood pressure was getting up about this. And then you have that anxiety as a fan. What if he does lose? What if he does lose? And Michael Bisping was like, you take 4 years off and then you saunter back into the ring like you own the place? Get out of here. There's a new winner in town. Yeah. And so even fans were like, I hope he wins. Certainly hope he wins. And it was a 3-round fight and he won. He got him in a rear naked choke, as I referenced earlier. I watched it again last night and the thrill of watching that match came back. But his legacy is, I think, leaving at a time where he preserved his mental health, coming back after 4 years and showing that's possible as well. Because that really, that is such a huge gamble when you have been out of this industry to come back after 4 years of not fighting seriously. And then he retired for good. So yeah, I think the mental health aspect, the concern for his own sanity and not just sacrificing himself for entertainment, for other people's entertainment, and I think his incredible fighting style, and also showing that an obsessive nature is not a bad thing and used and honed in the right way can be an incredible thing.
Two things that I noted just to conclude this section. He first of all founded a charity, the GSP Foundation, which its aim is to reduce bullying and encourage youth participation in sports, which is obviously two things that sort of helped him, right? Addressing the bullying and then getting into sports. And of course, in his tiny town of St. Isidore, they honored him in 2021 with a life-sized bronze statue of himself. And it sits in an octagon, I guess, that represents the UFC cage, and it has his 8 core values, which are engraved in French on the octagon floor, which are, I'll just say them in English, family, perseverance, wisdom, integrity, generosity, respect, creativity, and honor.
What a guy. What a beautiful guy.
Now, Ali, for this second section, we just have to go back a bit to Georges St-Pierre and his retirement. His final retirement from MMA was in 2019. And I guess the issue is his medical situation kind of made it that he had to retire, right?
That's right. And this is like Nobody had heard of colitis in any circles that I traveled in. I only know a little bit about it now because a friend of mine has had it for a few years. Nobody knew why that was something that would take you out. So there were a lot of question marks about it. There was also theories about, you know, it might be depression. It might be he's not enjoying it the way and he's just making an excuse. You know, people love to turn, you know, a morsel into a meal. But looking back now, I think ulcerative colitis obviously is much more serious than people considered it at the time, having no knowledge about it at all in the general public. I wanted to ask some questions about, you know, what it is, how serious it can be, how does it get in the way of people's lives and the commonality of it. So let's talk about what ulcerative colitis is. We've mentioned it in passing a few times on this podcast, so I thought it was valuable to dive in and link it to George as well.
Yeah, so it's under the category of inflammatory bowel disease. And so there's two types of inflammatory bowel disease, so which is literally inflammation of your bowels, right? So one is Crohn's disease, and maybe we'll do a separate episode on Crohn's disease because they are slightly different, even though they're grouped together. So you'll often hear the term Crohn's and colitis. A lot of organizations like in Canada, they're called Crohn's and colitis because they're putting these two together, even though they have some differences. And so the other type is ulcerative colitis. And Crohn's disease can affect any part of your GI tract, they say from your mouth to your anus. But ulcerative colitis only involves the large bowel, so that end part of the bowel, which again, we've talked about before.
Can I ask you, are there different types of colitis, and this is one of those types, or is the term ulcerative colitis?
Yeah, colitis would just mean an inflammation of your bowel. It might not be due to ulcerative colitis, so you could have a colitis from an infection, right, or something like that. So that's another, there's other causes.
Those are milder, is that the sense that
I mean, you could get pretty sick with that as well. I would say ulcerative colitis is more of a chronic condition, right? So it's not like, oh my gosh, I got food poisoning, or I have some bacteria, and now I have colitis. This is more of a chronic condition. But it is inflammation, and kind of this goes to what you were asking me about. So we don't actually know the cause, which I know you're going to ask about. But basically, you get this inflammation, you get erosions and ulcers in your large bowel, and you will have cycles of relapse and then remission and then relapse again. So one of the key things is you can be fine for a bit and then have a relapse. And also you need to be followed over time by a gastroenterologist, so a specialist in this, to monitor over time for these relapses, for ongoing inflammation. So, you know, like I said, we don't know. People think overall, like a lot of the things we talk about, there's probably some genetic predisposition, and then you have something that triggers you to have this disorder, whether it's a reaction to an infection or something in the environment. Some people say it's with using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen or naproxen, but they've even said stress or consumption of milk products. So we don't actually know. And then one of the weird things is smoking. There is some scientific evidence that it actually might be protective of ulcerative colitis, which is kind of a bit strange. And so, you know, we don't really know. But basically, you know, you have a dysregulated immune response in the bowel against common bacteria that are just normally found in your gut. And for some reason, you know, you get this exaggerated response. And then you basically compromise the lining, which is the epithelial barrier. And you compromise that, and that will lead to these ulcerations, the inflammation. One other bit of evidence that says maybe it's an immune response is that there's a lower incidence of ulcerative colitis in patients who have undergone an appendectomy. So the idea is maybe, you know, if you have your appendix in your body and you have ongoing inflammation because the appendix can accumulate bacteria and debris and then maybe some inflammation, then maybe that ongoing inflammation can predispose you to getting ulcerative colitis, or UC is the abbreviation for it, later on. So, you know, it is hard to know. And like I said, things like ibuprofen, you know, a lot of doctors will say just avoid using something like ibuprofen or naproxen if you have ulcerative colitis. But again, these are just correlations that we see.
Got it. So causes we don't know, but we know things that aggravate it. Stress, dairy. Is there a genetic link?
Yeah, so it is seen more commonly in, like, say, identical twins. There can often be a family history, but it's not a purely genetic disease. So we think that there's some genetic influence on it, but there's no test that you can do to find if you have the gene for UC.
How common is ulcerative colitis?
So it affects about, let's say in the US, about 1 million people. And it's actually 3 more times as common than Crohn's disease. So it's the more common of these inflammatory bowel disease.
Okay.
See it more often in women than in men. And it's interesting the way it kind of peaks. So you get a peak at 15 to 25 years of age. So kind of young adulthood. And then a smaller peak at 55 to 65. But it can occur in any age, including kids. It affects about 2 out of every 100,000 children. So a bit less common.
Okay. How does it present itself? What does it look like when somebody has it? What does it feel like? How do you know or suspect you might have?
Yeah. So usually it's rectal bleeding and frequent stools, and you'll have like mucousy discharge. So I think it's enough that people would be a bit suspicious in terms of what's going on. People also have this symptom called tenesmus, which is like feeling you need to have a bowel movement, but you don't. And often it's kind of subtle. You don't really notice, and then just things kind of accumulate over time. We know that in kids, it can be a bit more subtle, even more than adults, where you can get fatigue, a failure to gain weight, delayed puberty, and you think, oh, you know, and I do have some patients I see, they have neurologic issues for other reasons, sometimes unrelated to like the ulcerative colitis, but I see them and you see these kids and they're like really thin and they look like they're like trying to lose weight, but they're not. And we describe it as cachectic, like almost like an anorexic kind of like, and then of course, you know, when you talk to them, oh, it's because I'm having problems with my colitis. So you can see that, but you can get severe cases, right? Where you get severe rectal discharge, severe pain, dehydration, fever. You know, you could have attacks like this that can be really severe. And about 15% of patients will have an attack that's severe enough to require hospitalization. So it could be just minor symptoms that grumble along for a long period of time, or these what we call fulminant attacks.
Do we know which level of severity was affecting Georges St-Pierre?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It's a really good point. So I couldn't find too much about him talking about it other than he retired from it. And we'll talk about some of the treatments that he's looked into for it. The other thing to keep in mind is there's also manifestations that occur outside the colon. Okay, which is kind of strange because it's an inflammatory bowel disease. So why is it affecting other areas? Well, it just does. And one of the things is you can get arthritis. And I have some friends who have ulcerative colitis who that was kind of their main initial symptom was actually arthritis. And then they kind of figured it out later and was interfering with their lives a bit more. You can get inflammation of your eyes, something called uveitis. You can get something called primary sclerosing cholangitis, which is an inflammation of your bile ducts and liver. Very serious. That could lead to liver failure. And you also can get skin findings. One of them is called pyoderma gangrenosum. It's actually different than gangrene, which, you know, we hear about in different situations. But you basically get large, painful ulcers on your skin, often on your legs. So it's kind of like, even though there's inflammation in the bowel, it can also cause inflammation in other areas, which is an interesting finding.
As usual, talking to you about a condition like this makes me just so scared about the 90 million things that could happen to me and so grateful that many of them have not happened mm-hmm. yet. What is the testing that they do for colitis?
Yeah, so you can do blood work where you can look for what's called an ANCA, which is an anti-neutrophil cytoplasmic antibody. You can also do what's called an ASCA, which is an anti-saccharomyces cerevisiae antibody.
And say that 10 times fast.
I know. That's why we use the abbreviations. And basically, I'll just be brief about this because we don't have to get into too much detail, but depending on which one of those two is positive or negative, then you can decide whether it's more related to ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. And so that's blood test, but really you need to have a colonoscopy with a biopsy. And so they look at the tissue under a microscope and then they can diagnose it. And you have to be a bit careful about that because if a patient has a severe colitis or an acute attack, you can get perforation during colonoscopy because of the inflammation of the bowel. So, but obviously, if you need to get that done, your doctor will talk to you about that and the risks about that.
Before we get into what Georges St-Pierre has credited as far as his treatment, what is the general treatment as far as the medical community is concerned?
Yeah, so it's you want to treat both an acute attack as well as in a lot of patients we use a maintenance medication. So initially they will use corticosteroids. So we talk about these kinds of steroids to decrease inflammation and all other anti-inflammatory agents. And then there are these autoimmune disease modifying agents that people use to maintain remission in patients. And so those are more of a maintenance therapy. So not really when you're acutely sick, but for maintenance therapy. There are many of those. I'm not going to get into all the details about those, and how they're selected is really done by a gastroenterologist knowing the patient and deciding which one to kind of pursue. But I must admit, again, this is just my anecdotal evidence from some of my patients who are on this, like they're often doing very well on these disease modifying agents. Not a lot of them have had side effects, and I see them and I'm like, how are things going with your colitis? Totally fine. Like, let's focus on my neurologic stuff, which, like I said, is often separate in these patients, but they said it's going really well. And of course, a lot of these involve infusions or injections that you get on a regular basis. But in terms of maintenance therapy, I think that they do pretty good. Some patients need surgery. Okay. And sometimes you need an acute surgery, so an urgent surgery, and that can be due because some people will get something called toxic megacolon, okay? So that's when your colon becomes mega, becomes really enlarged because it's inflamed. And basically, again, just to keep things short, the inflammation goes deep down to the deep layers of the tissue and causes swelling. And if you did like x-rays or CT scans, you'd see like the colon is just huge and dilated. But it's toxic because this also causes bacterial growth and bacterial toxins. So this is very serious and you can get very, very sick. You know, the other reason to have surgery in the immediate period is if you're having ongoing bleeding that can't be controlled. Like, you may need to have surgery to remove this area of the bowel. But some patients will need elective surgery to remove parts of the colon. And that could be long-term steroid dependence. That's one reason, because long-term steroids will have significant side effects. So maybe you want to get them off that. Some patients will have an adenocarcinoma of their colon found on screening. So it's very important that even if things are going well with ulcerative colitis, that you continue to get screened, because 3 to 5% of patients will develop an adenocarcinoma. So if you have that, then they're probably going to do surgery as well. And some people say, you know, if you have the disease for 7 to 10 years, just in general, that may be a reason to have surgery. There's different kinds of surgery, which I won't really get into, but a lot of them involve creating like a pouch and removing part of the colon. Some patients will need a colostomy. So it's definitely a significant surgery if people need to get it.
I bring this up reluctantly with you, especially, Asif, but Georges St-Pierre talks about intermittent fasting in some detail about how it's helped him with his colitis. Now, I know it's tough to isolate intermittent fasting as the thing. He also stopped fighting. So what that means is the stress that he had every day of his life as he prepared for the next fight. I can't lose. I'm obsessive about this, studying the fighter and the press in his face about, like, what are you going to do, Georges? You could lose, you know, that claustrophobia that he describes before he retired the first time. That's all gone. And if, as you said at the beginning, stress is one of the contributing factors, or can be, and if it was for him, removing that stress, I'm sure.
Yeah, and then I know what his diet was like. You know, you have to make a certain weight, whether he's trying to cut weight to get down to welterweight, or as you said, he had to go up to fight in middleweight.
He did go up.
These things are challenging. So let's talk about that. I'll just go over some other alternative therapies first, and then I'll answer your question about
Okay. Just the fact that you have these alternative theories.
It's because I knew you were going to ask about it. That's why. So probiotics, there is some evidence that they can be effective in maintaining remission. And one study found that looking at a commercially available probiotic supplement found remission in 45% of patients who had mild to moderate UC. Fish oil has shown no benefit over placebo. And in general, there's no specific diet restrictions. You might think, okay, no lactose, no dairy, but some patients will have concurrent lactose intolerance. So maybe you just don't want to have lactose because of that. And really no diet can maintain remission from what we know. And this issue of intermittent fasting comes up, and it's a reasonable thing to ask about. There is some evidence that intermittent fasting might work, but I'll just tell you three of the studies that have evidence for it are in mice. And one interesting thing is that mice aren't humans, actually. Ellie, I don't know if you knew
that. Is there proof of that?
I want to see the evidence that mice aren't humans. Yeah. So basically looked at time-restricted eating in these mice, and it may have helped. And some of them actually suggested maybe that they were actually worse. But like I said, there's about three studies. So what about the human studies? There's actually only been one that I could find. And so I found it, and this is also quoted on some of the Crohn's and colitis websites in Canada and the US. And it actually took place during a certain month, which changes every year based on the lunar calendar, Ali.
February?
No, what the hell? Ramadan. So so we just finished Ramadan.
We just finished Ramadan, and my entire extended family was talking about like how amateurish it feels to be like, okay, I'm going to need, you know, you tell your boss, I need next Wednesday or Thursday off. Well, which one is it? Wednesday or Thursday? Well, it depends on the moon. You know, somebody's going to see the moon and, well, don't you already know the moon is going to, well, yeah, but it has to be seen by the naked eye. So should we schedule a meeting for you Thursday? You think, I really don't know. Maybe both. So you're taking both days off? No, I only need to take one day. Like my sister-in-law was going through how clownish it sounds. And it's like, man, we can't. You know, because also the eclipse just happened. We know 128 years from now when the next eclipse is going to be. We don't know when the moon's going to be sighted in 3 days. I mean, it's insane. So obviously I know what you're talking about. I'm trying to make a joke, a leap year joke, huh? I saw your blood vessel in your forehead almost.
It was like pulsating. So, okay. So this study looked at 60 participants with inflammatory bowel disease who fasted for Ramadan. And they looked at the quality of life, psychological state, and disease severity before and after Ramadan, because then you would have been fasting, let's say, for 10 to 12 hours every day. So maybe you would find something. They suggested that there was no correlation between fasting and those variables that they looked at. So what's the short story? Limited evidence. Some maybe mice studies may suggest it. This Ramadan study didn't quite, you know, prove it. So what would I say to Georges St-Pierre? Obviously, like, I mean, he finds that that helped him. So I would never say, oh, don't do that. Also, he would beat the crap out of me. But no, he wouldn't. He's a nice guy.
That's not a reason to not.
No. But the real question is, can we advocate it to every person who has ulcerative colitis? You can't, because there's just not enough evidence for that. But I think if found it helps him, then more power to it. And the fact that he seems to be in remission, like, I mean, that's from the article that you sent me. I think it was from MMA Junkie, you know, that periodical, that he seemed to be in remission because of that. It's great for him. Again, it's tough. We don't know because we haven't interviewed him. Like, is he on other medicines? Is he on those disease-modifying medicines that he takes every few weeks or every month or so, right? I don't know. So is it intermittent fasting alone? Is it in combination with something else? I don't know. But I'm glad he's doing well for sure.
Mm-hmm. There is an episode of a Joe Rogan podcast. Whatever your thoughts are about Joe Rogan, this is 6 years ago. It's called the JRE, or Joe Rogan Experience, MMA podcast. So this is just really with MMA fighters. So he has this podcast. And this would be, you know, episode, I can look it up to tell you for sure, episode number 28. And now he's in like the thousands by now. But Joe Rogan, a broadcaster, commentator, massive fan of martial arts and of Georges St-Pierre. You know, you don't get too much Joe Rogan. You get a lot of the respect and reverence that Joe has for Georgie, lets him sort of speak. And George talks at some length about his, you know, après fighting training regime, which is already like, I would die, you know, 5 minutes into it. And he's like not fighting anymore. But obviously, you know, he operates at a different level. But if anybody's interested in hearing him talk personally about, you know, reflecting on what fighting meant to him and what it was like and how he lives his life now. As I said, that was 6 years ago, but that was a great interview.
that's our episode for today. Let us know what you guys thought about our discussion about Georges St-Pierre. Any other celebrities you want us to talk about? Any other MMA fighters? We're happy to talk about these things. And let us know about ulcerative colitis. Like I said, we are going to do an episode in the next few weeks on Crohn's disease to kind of pair it with this. And then you guys can hear about the differences and the similarities between these diseases. Ali, anything you got going on?
Don't say it with a deep, exasperated sigh, all right? Just ask me like a normal human being, a supportive friend. I don't have anything. StandupAli.com is the website. Feel free to check that out, and I'll have some information about things, goings-ons.
Mm-hmm. And reach out to us, drvcomedian@gmail.com, drvcomedian on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We are everywhere. You know, we haven't asked for this in a while, but we really appreciate 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get them. Make sure you also click the subscribe buttons on Spotify and Apple Podcasts so we get automatic downloads. That's really important that it gets downloaded to your device every week, every Friday when we have an episode. But finally, remember that although I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. Medical issues we talk about are for your interest and information only, and they're not medical advice. Please consult your medical professionals for actual medical advice. Thanks for listening.